Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. A listener earlier, Sean, I think it was, asked how much are the ATV tests. Well, from what I can determine, €250 seems to be the cost of the test. So in other words, if you own an ATV and you want to operate it legally for work use on your property, if you're a farmer or what have you, it's a €250 charge for that training. Greg, why is there so little news reports from RTE and local stations about the blockage of water, electricity and food supplies to people of Palestine? Israel is committing crimes against humanity and, as usual, our government issues warnings to all media to keep quiet because of pressure from the EU and America. I have been following this story quite closely. I know President Biden has called on Israel to abide by the rules of war. The EU has, Ireland has condemned the collective blame strategy. I've seen it everywhere, to be honest with you. I hope you don't think I'm contradicting you. Obviously, from a local radio station perspective, we covered it in the newspapers this morning. We have a guest coming in with us very, very shortly. But, you know, to dedicate 3 hours of a show where we're focusing on the northwest of Ireland, we're not going to dedicate a ton of that, if you know what I'm saying, to international issues as important as they are, because there's international issues all over the world. So I've seen an awful lot of what you're talking about. And as I say, I referenced it this morning myself. But that doesn't mean that I'm saying you're wrong, if you know what I mean. I can only just be honest. In regards to the caller about customs taking fuel, it is illegal to transport fuel without ADR. A spill of kerosene could be detrimental to other road users. So this is a caller who was stopped at a customs checkpoint. Although customs, are they enforcing customs rules? Are they enforcing transportation rules? Or maybe they both overlap. But a caller earlier was taking three containers of home heating oil from the north into the Republic. It was stopped by customs and it was taken from them. A few years back, people were given a full license without taking any test. If you have been driving for a good many years and done your driving lessons, why don't they do the same now? It's possible. I think it's just with the I can't see that happening in modern society, particularly with the terrible carnage we've seen on our roads this year. But, you know, not particularly, but road safety is going in the wrong direction. An amnesty, which was going back some time now. I can't remember when it was precisely, but I can't see something similar to that happening again. The road from Duhurry over Glendone is a hidden gem and is a fabulous scenic route that I bring many friends on. What needs there is lay-bys the whole way, so traffic can pull in and pass. Was on the Isle of Mull in Scotland recently, and from the side of the island is a singular road and lay-bys, so two-way traffic can pull in and let incoming traffic pass. Regardless of revenue control, it's illegal, in my opinion, to carry oil in a vehicle other than a suitably made tanker. Okay. Now, I presume then that precludes the fuel tanks. I mean, if you go to your local service station and fill up with kerosene, what are you transporting that in? Are you saying that's illegal? And if it's illegal to transport kerosene in your vehicle, how is it then legal for it to be sold at pumps in the Republic? That's the one thing confuses me a little bit. Presumably, you know, people aren't putting it into a metal tank or whatever it might be. So how, if it's illegal to transport home heating oil, regardless of being it cross-border, as that listener says, how then is it legal for it to be sold at the pumps, which you'll see quite a bit. As it relates to the car park calls from Councillor Kelly there at Glenveagh, caller says, no need for a new car park, wasting more taxpayers' money. Again, best of a good car park 200 metres up the road where buses do turn and cars do park. Putting more car parking spaces at the bridle path will defeat the wild look of the area. The R254 road is not that busy and people can use the bus supplied by the park. A car park will only encourage joyriders and boy racers who do speed trials in the park. Yep, as I say, maybe obviously it's to suit a demand there. I would have just driven in. It's ridiculous that driving tests are cancelled if there is snow and just frost too, generally. Surprise, surprise on that issue. Donegal forgotten again. Right, okay. I am going to take a break for the bingo numbers because it's jackpot day and I know a lot of you are keen to play. So good luck if you are playing. The numbers are just after this.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, we're joined in studio by Dr. Joseph O'Neill and Adrian McCarry, Letterkenny Palestine Committee Member, Interfaith for Palestine at Letterkenny. Gentlemen, both of you, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much, Greg.
I think we can all agree the scenes that we are witnessing from the Middle East are just unbelievable, aren't they? Absolutely shocking.
Shocking, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, terrible.
Before we talk really about the current events, can we have a little bit of history, Dr. O'Neill, as it relates to this parcel of land, you know, Palestine, the Gaza Strip, its relationship with the region?
Thank you very much. Yes, context is everything, and the historical context is extremely important. In 1948, three quarters of a million Palestinians were terrified out of their land by a number of massacres. In 1967, a further 300,000 Palestinians were terrified out of their land, again by a series of massacres. Any child who lives in Gaza has probably witnessed, who's the age of 12, has probably witnessed about four invasions by the Israelis. What is described, and unfortunately the word that is used in this context is genocide. And a well-known exiled Jewish Israeli academic, Ilan Pape, has described this situation as a creeping genocide. Now, genocide is a systematic attempt to destroy people, not necessarily massacring them all in total, but destroying their lives, destroying their daily freedoms, destroying their places of religious worship, destroying their ability to walk out in the street and go to the shops, destroying their educational system, and destroying the infrastructure. So that's the background. I think the that was a very simple summary of what's happening. And what we have is not a conflict. It is actually an ongoing, creeping genocide of the Palestinian people.
And we have, particularly the Gaza Strip, a very small strip of land, intensely populated, 2.2 million people, the majority of which are reliant on aid, and obviously then are reliant on Israel for electricity, water and what have you. Pretty much they are in an open prison. I think most people would agree, because obviously if you can't move freely, that's, you know, I don't think anyone could dispute that description, offered. But what is, as far as we know, Adrian, what is life been like over the last number of decades for people living in Palestine, the Gaza Strip?
Well, basically, as you described, there's been an open prison, effectively, 2.2 million people. And, you know, in the last 15 years, they've been sort of subject to, you know, just constant bombardment in a way. The structures that they rely on to live in have been decimated. It's difficult to get goods in and out. And, you know, it's just unthinkable, the sort of conditions that people are living in there, and particularly whenever half the population is under the age of 18, children. And it's just, yeah, unbearable, in my opinion, really, you know.
And In terms of, well, we'll get to it. Maybe we'll get to some sort of a solution down the line. But in terms of the events, before I want to get to the events as well, I'm sorry, I want to take this step by step so as it's everything's given sort of equal conversation. Obviously, the latest escalation has been triggered, though it depends how far you want to go back, by the actions of Hamas. Now, Hamas doesn't enjoy full support either in Gaza or Palestine more generally. So do we have a sense of, from within there, everybody's suffering now at this point, what the general population's reaction has been? I think the support kind of on the Gaza Strip, I think full support with sort of maybe they're, you know, we support them, it's around about 65-67%. So there's an awful lot of people that don't necessarily support Hamas. So can you talk to me about that, Dr. O'Neill?
Thank you. I think we need to have our facts right here. And of course, there is massive Israeli propaganda we're hearing through the airwaves. Hamas was the democratically elected government of Palestine. It is a popular government and it is loved by the people. And it is fighting for the liberation of Palestine.
So you dispute sort of those internationally public statistics that Hamas's total support of the Palestinian people?
I think there are lies, damned lies and statistics. And I think what we don't hear, we only hear one side of the situation about what's happening to the Palestinians. And it's a very subtle, sophisticated propaganda system. And the elected government of Palestine, of Gaza in particular, is elected, and they are protecting their people. Now, when you're in a system, a situation of genocide, we totally disagree with any form of violence in our group. But when you're in that situation, sometimes if you're fighting against genocide, history has shown us that if you don't stand up and fight for yourself, mm-hmm. the creeping genocide we've seen over the last 76 years will continue.
What is your view then, Dr. O'Neill, of the action taken by Hamas at the weekend? Do you believe that was justified in the face of genocide as you describe it?
I think that what I need to say is that I'm the chair mainly of the Interfaith for Palestine group, which is a religious group. We have some atheists and non-believers in it. So we focus on the religious aspects of the issue. And what we're dealing with from the point of view of our group is a sectarian genocide.
That's that's your description of what the Israelis are responsible for.
Yes, yeah, of absolutely. Course.
But just to the actions of Hamas there at the weekend, what's your view of
well, I've just told you that we would disagree with any form of violence taken out. But we understand why people did what they did in 1916. We understand what people did in the Warsaw Ghetto during World War II when they broke out of that prison. So, and it has been, Gaza has been described as by David Cameron as the world's largest prison, open-air prison, and it's a concentration camp. And I think to put it in the Irish context, we need to contextualise it. The smallest county in Ireland is Louth. Gaza is half the size mm-hmm. of Louth. It has 2.2 million people in it, with no water, no food, no energy, and the buildings in Gaza look like Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. So we have an absolutely shocking genocide. There's no need for it. The prison gates are closed. The Israelis have closed the prison gates. There is no need, there is no call for innocent Palestinian children to be murdered ruthlessly and continuously at this stage.
Yeah, and Adrian, what is your views of I mean, with this in this day and age, you talk of propaganda and listen, it's rife. I get that. I'm not disputing that. But in this day and age, we have access to social media platforms, Telegram, where what happens is you can see it. And what happened to me, and I can say this genuinely because I've not coming with an agenda. I'm not controlled in any way. I don't have any particular, I'm formulating as I'm going here. But it seemed horrendous, and I suppose when you're seeking to, get international support from people that are passive up until now, to see what was done to people who aren't soldiers or aren't involved in the military, to me it was horrendous. It's unimaginable, and I've kind of struggled with people's reluctance to condemn that, but I get it because they can also reflect on what has been put upon the Palestinian people. But for me, the last couple of days have just been absolutely horrendous. And, again, let me clarify. Someone might say to me, well, I can show you a few videos of what the people of the Gaza Strip have endured. I get that, right? But I have to talk from the position where I am at emotionally right now.
I'm in a similar position, Greg, really, I'm just sort of like a common person here living in Ireland and witnessing these events and sort of wondering what the hell is going on. And the only thing that I can sort of like draw, fall back onto is like a failure in the wider international community to sort of like look at the agreement that was drafted there 30 years ago called the Oslo Agreement, and where one side of the signatories were complying with that agreement, and the other side apparently weren't. So, and this has now been allowed to fester, and it's now manifested as this sort of like horrible tragedy that's happening in that part of the world. And it really shouldn't have been allowed to get to this stage, really, you know.
Ursula von der Leyen has commented, attacks against civilian infrastructure, especially electricity, are war crimes. Cutting off men, women, children of water, electricity and heating with winter coming, these are acts of pure terror. Yeah. That was the comments you made about Russia. Mm-hmm. But nothing similar coming, seemingly, as it relates to the people of Palestine. Dr. O'Neill, why is there and to be honest with you, it seems a lot of the international leaders are being dragged kicking and screaming to sort of implore Israel to at least abide by the rules of war. But why is it different when we're talking about an oppressor of Ukraine versus, as many would say, Israel is an oppressor of the Palestinians?
That's a very good point. There was an excellent radio interview with a Palestinian doctor in Gaza yesterday. He made exactly the same point. He said Palestinian history now is pre-Ukraine and post-Ukraine. And what Ukraine has shown us, it says, is a massive double standard. If you're a white Christian, we open our doors to you. That's great. I think Ireland is fantastic that it's taken in 100,000 Ukrainians. But if you're a brown Muslim or Palestinian Christian, and you've been undergoing a creeping genocide for 76 years, there has not been the same response. There has not been the same outrage and public speaking. Now, what I would say, I might say, is that we are an apolitical group, we're interfaith, but we have to mention Sinn Féin here. Sinn Féin have been very, very forthright. They have many faults, I'm sure, but they have been very forthright in speaking up for the rights of the Palestinian, as has people before Prophet, mm-hmm. particularly Richard Boyd Barrett has spoken very, very severely to the Israeli ambassador, and that's gone viral. What we are disappointed with in our group is the relative silence relating to the Palestinians from Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and the other parties. So, you know, top marks to Sinn Féin and People Before Profit for their stand of integrity on the Palestinian issue. That's not to say that we can't criticise them for other aspects of their
I don't have ideology. The exact quotes in my head, but in fairness to Micheál Martin, I think he did... There were some nuances to his comments. Maybe it didn't go quite as far as you... I can't recall off the top of my head the comments from Leo Varadkar. So, Adrian, the problem is it seems beyond actual repair, this situation. Israel now has, and this is why the actions of Hamas, as of what I've witnessed, are unimaginable. What the terror that people were put through, innocent people, whatever happens to people who decide to fight for their country, that there is an associated risk with that, but just to innocence. And then, of course, all of the attack on the innocents, children, particularly in the Gaza Strip, are more vulnerable to bombings and what have you. There's a terrible loss of children's lives over the course of an awful long time. But what is the solution? Because the weekend's actions, there are people probably would argue that this is an Israeli false flag, because it's given them now the international backing to go in, and whoever gets in the way, it doesn't matter. They can go in and they are determined to wipe out Hamas. Mm-hmm. And whoever gets in the way of what's standing in their way now is it's irrelevant. It's collateral. Even the hostages, it doesn't matter. So whatever we've witnessed before, I think we're going to see something far worse for the people of Palestine going forward. That turned into a statement.
It's, you know what I mean?
It's a difficult one. And I don't have any answers to it. All I can think of is people having respect and responsibility and sort of having wisdom in this situation. And this is, again, where I go back to the international community. This subject has been on the table within the UN for years, and no action has been taken. Nobody has sort of stood up to, not enforce, but to sort of like respect the decisions that were made within the UN with regard to this situation, mm-hmm. particularly with regard to the rights of Palestinians and the indigenous people of that land. And just try and, you know, facilitate peace and justice as best as they can. And it's as I said earlier, like, it's manifested in this situation now, where it's been allowed to fester. And it's now just a horrible tragedy, really, you know.
Yeah, and again, and even sort of maybe more right-leaning people seem confused because they're supporting both Russia and Israel at the same time, which it beggars belief to me. And it just goes to show that people adopt positions and really perhaps don't fully understand precisely what's going on. I don't engage with them, but I think, well, you understand the sort of connections here and how all this works. And then we have this situation whereby in the Middle East, we have both the Israelis and the Palestinians openly reporting the casualties, whilst in Russia and Ukraine, they're actually keeping those cards very close to their chest. It's just interesting, the differences that we're seeing. What is the solution, Dr. Joseph O'Neill? And I mean, you know, not what you wish it to be, because that may be unachievable, but in reality, what is the solution here? Because I just can't imagine the bitterness and the hatred, how it's going to be magnified even furthermore with what is to come, especially when the ground invasion from Israel begins.
Yes, I think 2 points. One is, I don't think this problem will get solved in our lifetimes. So we need to keep working at it. The other thing I would say that's come across to me time and again is Palestinians are very forgiving people. They're very forgiving, and that has been my experience for the last 15 years in dealing with the situation. Now, what can we do? Well, I'm the chair of an interfaith group, so we have a three-point plan. It's very simple. It doesn't seem like very much, but it's something. And as Mother Teresa said, it may be a drop in the ocean. It's my drop in the ocean. And we have a three-point plan is pray. Pray, or if you're a non-believer, be mindful of the situation every day, even for a short period. Talk. Talk about Palestine. Briefly, and when it comes up, the topic comes up, don't be afraid to discuss it. And nobody should accuse you of being sectarian for discussing, you know, the longest and best documented genocide in history, which is what's happened to the Palestinians. And finally, to act. And act whatever way is appropriate for your own current situation. Our interfaith group in particular, one of our members is a Jewish Israeli Holocaust survivor. He's a famous artist, and we have an exhibition of Palestinian paintings by him. It's an olive branch to the Palestinian people by an exiled Jewish Israeli artist. And it's been travelling all around Ulster, and it's visited all nine Ulster counties. It's currently in the Conway Mill Heritage Centre in West Belfast. So the other actions you can do are very simple. Most countries in the world formally recognise Palestine, over 70%. Over 10 countries in Europe formally recognise Palestine, including the Vatican, which doesn't do things in a hurry. And we would say people should write to their TDs and to their councillors and say, Ireland, it's a very simple measure, but it's very symbolically important. Ireland should formally recognise Palestine. The second thing people should do in the south of Ireland is to support Senator Frances Black, the singer and senator, support her Occupied Territories Bill, wherein Ireland legally promises not to buy products from a militarily occupied area like Palestine.
That's never caught on. I've been doing interviews about that for a very long time, about to put pressure on Israel through, be it they make diggers and clothes and electrical products. It's never really, I mean, it seems like an obvious thing, but I think the complexity of it for most people...
Well, it's not complex.
It is, because I'll tell you why. As soon as you try and mention it or ask a question, you're accused of being part of a propaganda machine and shut down. And I've experienced of that, and a little bit at the start of this interview. And I don't mean that with any way disrespectful whatsoever. And I understand where that comes from because of what people have been through. Mm-hmm. But people are afraid to say anything and educate themselves because they're afraid of what's about to come. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that, and I get it with a number of contributors from Palestine. And often the first tone of the question, people go on the defensive, and then people, you back out of that because I don't want it. And you get me? And I mean that with absolute respect to you, Dr. O'Neill. But I think that's the problem. I think people don't fully understand it, and maybe they're getting a better understanding of it now.
I think the word here is boycott. Now, boycott was invented in Ireland in 1880 and was a very, very successful, peaceful way of getting people's rights. So Ireland's famous for it. And what we're talking about basically is a simple boycott. Don't buy people's products. We had a very successful peaceful boycott in South Africa against apartheid. Don't have their sportsmen here. Don't have their artists here. And don't send artists to Israel to support the cultural propaganda program. On a very simple local level, we had our meeting of our Palestine group yesterday. And we say there's other things you can boycott locally. Marks and Spencer's here routinely, in Letterkenny, routinely sell dates from Israel. We shouldn't be buying those because the profits from those dates goes towards the genocide. Tesco is routinely selling peppers. And again, the profits from those peppers is going towards the genocide.
And people can pick and choose which.
People can pick and choose. And people can actually, if they feel a little bit stronger, they go to the manager, very politely say, look, you know, I don't think we should be selling these products. And finally, there's medications. There's a drug company called Teva. It's one of the top drug companies in the world. It does generic drugs. It has a big factory in Wexford or Waterford. It's an Israeli company. The profits from those drugs goes towards the genocide of the Palestinians. I've changed my Teva drugs. I've gone to my GP and said, I'm sorry, but I really don't want to be taking these drugs from that company. Could you change to another generic? And they do it without any comment whatsoever.
I wonder, has the actions of Israel, and some might say Hamas too, Adrian, if we live in a world now whereby we've, I don't believe we've ever been more divided, be it Jewish people, Muslim people, Christian people, even division within those religions, whether you're not stern enough or you're too liberal or what have you, then we have huge influencers like Elon Musk, who, as the Gaza electricity was cut off, decided to make charging your electric vehicle in Israel free. With everything, we are so divided now. I think it empowers countries to take actions or groups to take actions because they know people are stuck in their views. There's no... do you get where I'm coming from? Again, and question that sort of rambled into a statement, but I just fear that the world is now in such a space whereby we're going to see more and more of this because people will seemingly back something regardless just because it aligns with a general view that they've formed in their mind.
Yeah, there's severe fragmentation going on there within societies and, like, talking about social media, like, it contributes to that there as well, where people sort of follow their own kind of tunnel vision in a way and don't kind of, like, have a broader open view about what's going on and getting better context about the situation instead of just listening to the headlines and following like the main media out there with the stories that they're basically broadcasting. So it's a very difficult time, and it takes time to sit down and learn these things as well, like, which is a huge investment and effort required from someone to do that there. And it's kind of like contradictory in a way, where history is supposed to sort of like inform us, you know, make us more intelligent. But now it's kind of like being used as sort of like a weapon to basically narrow our thinking and get us all to sort of like think in a certain way, but, you know, within a group think kind of setup.
Yeah.
So it's not helpful. But yeah, unfortunately, like, people are going to have to put the effort in and explore these matters a bit more broadly themselves.
Okay, well, if people have heard and are interested, there's a Peaceful Witness Day this Saturday at Tesco roundabout from midday to 2 p.m. There's also a monthly the first Friday of each month is Peaceful Witness Days. Where are they generally?
Same place.
Okay. Yeah. So if people want to go down and stand in solidarity with people, then they can. Will we ever see maybe where a country like ours, which is neutral and should be, I think, using our platform for peace, see a situation whereby different groups can cohabit on a roundabout and say enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the role perhaps...
It's just compassion, really, you know, like expressing that there.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Joseph O'Neill and Adrian McCarry, both members of the Letterkenny Palestine Committee, isn't that correct? And you're obviously of Interfaith for Palestine, Letterkenny. Thank you both very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg.
I greatly appreciate it. We'll be back with more after the break. We heard yesterday from a spokesperson for one of the redress focus groups, and to underline the work that's being done by them. And now, if you wish to engage with them, learn more information, there is a new website which has been launched, and it's a lovely website, actually. It is called, or the URL is, redressfocusgroups.ie. Roisin Gallagher is chair of the Redress Focus Groups and is with us now. Good morning, Roisin. How are you getting on?
Morning. Getting on great, yeah.
All right, it's good to have you with us. So just give us a brief outline of the formation of the redress focus groups. It's always good. You never know when new people switch in, Roisin, just so people understand.
Well, I suppose a few years ago I started talking about a support hub, and I knew that we had to get something together to get support in place for the entire county. And I kind of pushed away at that, and I realised it wasn't really working out, but I would keep pushing on anyway. And so before Christmas, I suppose maybe even back as far as August, September, I started thinking about the idea of bringing in volunteers to help with the crisis, because I knew there were so many people that were able to and willing to help with so many issues, but they didn't have a platform to begin that work or to start from. So in January, fast forward, we did a lot of talk, and I got together Joy and Brenda Tierney Joyce and Claire McDade, when we formulated the redress focus groups. So we are all homeowners, and so it's a homeowner led initiative. So we started in January by doing call outs for volunteers in various locations, and that's how it all began, really.
Mm. And it's not just helping people and campaigning on the technical side of things, it's recognizing too the emotional stress, which we've heard even just a fraction of on programmes like this. It's to assist in that as well, because there's this, people I know affected by this hatred of the property that they're in. They don't want to do anything to it. They don't care. Not everyone, of course, Roisin, but they're just so broken by it that they just don't feel there's any point in doing anything, you know, and then that permeates out through life as well too, Roisin.
Absolutely. Support and empowerment are two of our main focuses and redress focus groups. And the mental health supports, although there are a lot of mental health supports in the area, Greg, no one knows more than you about how stretched those services are. So we have nothing in place specifically for supports and mental health support for people living through the defective box crisis. We bandied about this number of 5,000, 7,000. I mean, and the Inishowen Independent did a great article last week. We're looking at that number, 7,000, being Inishowen alone. We're looking at 20,000 people. If you look about how many people are in those homes, you could be looking at, what, 80,000 people affected.
I know five outside Inishowen, and I have a small friends group. I know five outside Inishowen, a cluster, that are, they're defective concrete properties, but they, people haven't even really taken the step to establish that yet. But they know themselves, if that makes sense. So that's, as I say, I know five and one person with a relatively small sort of circle, if that makes sense.
So unfortunately, we don't have a number. We don't even have a true accurate estimate of a number. But I mean, the reality is, you take a drive around Donegal, there's even a village that you will drive through in Donegal. I won't say where it is. In 10 years' time, there'll be one building in that village that's standing. You know, it's a serious crisis, and one of the things that I have such an acute awareness of the enormity of the size of this. I don't know why, but I just seem to be able to grasp it. And I think there's a lot of people, the people that need to grasp it are not grasping the enormity of the situation. So creating awareness in this way, bringing people in, homeowners that feel frustrated or control of our own fate, of our own lives, has been taken away from us with this scheme. You know, and the lack of supports that are available. So redress focus groups gives that power back to the people, and they own the crisis. Mm. They own redress focus groups, and they are now in control mm-hmm. of their own fate.
And I think it's really important too, because you know, it's very hard to deal with everything, but I think it's really important for people that are affected by this, or want to, you are affected by this defective concrete issue, when there are redress focus group meetings held, for an example, that they go and attend, because the people that are involved in this need support as well, you know, and they've got a lot of information to disseminate and to pass on. And it's very easy, I suppose, on a cold, wet evening or whatever it might be, if there's other stuff on, not to. But I think when these meetings are held, it's really important as many people, and they are well attended, but as many people as possible go to them, because those involved in them, Roisin, and I'm not speaking on their behalf, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but are also people that are dealing with this themselves and then giving of their time to try and help other people. So there needs to be a sort of a backflow of support there as well, because it's draining, I'm sure, to be part of this process.
It is, absolutely. And the dedication and commitment that's been shown by the volunteers that are coming on board, they're all homeowners, almost all of them are homeowners, but of course some of them are not. They're affected indirectly, which is another thing people aren't aware of being being affected in various different ways. Like, for example, last night, the mental health and youth focus group, we had a meeting that began at 8:30 last night and didn't finish to 10 p.m. And actually, Caitlin was dialing in from Italy, so it was 11 p.m. with her. So the dedication and the commitment from volunteers and allies is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And in turn, that is going to empower other people to say, well, you know, I can take part in this. I can volunteer. I can take control of my own fate as well. And they'll be encouraged to do that through seeing what the volunteers have achieved in such a short space of time as well. But yes, the meetings, they weren't as well attended recently. But the next meeting that we're having is the 24th of October, and then the final meeting we're having is the 5th of December. Both of them are held in Umbrainan Hotel, but I want to really make it clear that because we are only getting started, we're only getting going, we understand that A, the website is not going to be able to be used by everyone. We understand that we need physical supports and tangible supports that people can, you know, we need a leaflet to go out to houses and people that are not online. And we also intend to do meetings throughout the county. So I don't want people in different areas of the county to feel that this is just a specific area.
I think people understand that. I hope they do, because there's a lot of stuff that's ongoing at the moment. The website itself is
for people in other counties and even on into Northern Ireland, that we can be a bit of a help to them and show them that what can be done.
Okay, and the website is live now. I'm always afraid of giving out the wrong address. redressfocusgroups.ie, and those watching and myself here looking at it now, it's exactly how I like my web pages. It's simple, if you know what I mean. About Redress Groups, info, news, contact. That's what's there. An invitation to become a member, help and advice, and then the media centre. And that's it. You click through, and it's designed to be user-friendly and manageable, and I know a lot of work has gone into that regard, and it's that's what's there now. It can grow from here on in now that the infrastructure is there.
Absolutely. And so I have to first of all thank Michael McGinty of Mina Design and his team, and also Brenda Tierney-Joyce of tierneyjoyce.ie. Myself and Brenda and Michael, we worked on this every single day. And as I, like, Michael approached me and said, I what about a website? And I was like, so amazed that someone would offer something like that. I mean, this is such a, they did it all in their free time. They actually took time out of their day's work to do this, to work on this. They did it all for free as a donation to the crisis, to the people. And what they have done is phenomenal. It's, this sort of thing should have been done a long time ago. Government should be doing this, should be supporting this, should be funding this. Redress Focus Groups is run with absolutely no funding whatsoever. Everyone is doing everything voluntarily, which is it's a bit worrying going forward because of the commitment that it takes to organise and run Redress Focus Groups. And I will not be able to commit the time that I have been able to commit in the last few months. And that's a bit of a concern, but I mean, we keep pushing on. We'll try.
Lots of people lighten the load then, you know, rather than a few people taking it up. And there's a head of steam that it needs to be maintained as well. But it's there right now for you to go and check out. And it supplements, you know, what's happening in terms of the work on social media, through the Facebook pages and Twitter X, etc., the in-person meetings, the campaigning and everything else that's going on. But the focus groups are delivering results. They are supporting people. And it's a long road, and it's a chipping away bit by bit. But if people stick together and unite and work together, people won't be beaten. You know, this is a series of battles, but it is a war that will be won. You know, and obviously that word has connotations.
The homeowners have proven this from day one. You know, you've got the science and you've got all the other things that the homeowners have done, and we have proven that if you work together, you can make change happen. So you have two choices. You can come and join the Redress Focus Groups, feel empowered, and be supported, and take control of your own fate, or you can feel like this is hopeless. Yes, the scheme is not fit for purpose. It is absolutely awful. It's a shame that we are left with the scheme that we are, but we've got to work with what we have right now. There's people saying, you know, that we can't be saddled with loans. The bank and an insurance group are not asking for loans. So that is misinformation. We we need, there are people that cannot live any longer in their homes and they need the money to be given to them.
Bridging finance. Yeah.
Build. Yeah. Yeah. It's bridge and finance, which is not a loan. Mm-hmm. So we need to be able to move on with what we have and we need to have hope. We need to have hope. We need to encourage each other and we need to make sure that we can get through this crisis because what if we give up and we don't do that, what are we going to, where are we going to be?
All right. You know? Redressfocusgroups.ie and people like Roisin and the others involved need your support as well because they can't do it all themselves, dealing with their own problems with their houses and family and everything else that comes with this life, Roisin. Listen.
Exactly, yeah, and I really have to mention the volunteers, Greg. Thanks so much for having me on this morning. But without the volunteers, we can't do any of the work. And you'll see on the website, there's a progress report of what the volunteers have actually done and achieved in such a short space of time. I would always have been the one answering anybody on social media. Now you'll have Jess, you'll have Debbie. And I'm also so grateful to Garrett Hart of Hart Media. So it is a culmination of people coming together and it proves that if we do, we can pull ourselves out of this hole.
Thanks, Roisin. Take care of yourself. Back with more after the break.